Welcome to the Land Investing Business Secret Podcast, where each short episode we talk about the strategies, experiences, and the tools to help you launch, grow, and scale your land business. Learn how to find freedom within your own business, find out ways to build consistency in your processes, and hear how other everyday land investors are winning so you can get to the next step closer to building your dream life through your land business. And I'm your host of the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast by Pebble, Jesse Kwong. Hey, how's it going? It's Jesse here from the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast. I've got a great guest here. I've been wanting to get him on the show for a long time. Kendall is going to be coming on here to talk about his experience as a land investor, where he came from. He's going to talk about some strategies as well, like, you know, really, if he were to get started. I thought it was incredible to hear some of his house wholesaling experience bleed into the world of land investing. You can hear my voice is kind of gone here. I've had a long chat with him, and it was a fun chat. There's a lot of things that we cover in this episode here. I think you're going to enjoy it. Anyways, enjoy the episode. All right, we've got my special guest here, somebody I've been wanting to get on the show for the last little while. Kendall, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Jesse.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, how can you not ignore Kendall when he's got like the I'm sure people say this all the time too. Probably tired of it, but only land fans. If you guys haven't checked out, we'll talk a little bit more about that for sure. Kendall, I know you've got a little bit of a background with land, and there's a lot going on with you, but I don't know, can you share how you got into land maybe and what that sort of looked like?
Yeah, so I actually got my start as a house wholesaler. So I had a house wholesaling business for about 8 or 9 years in Houston. And at the same time, I was actually a teacher, a public school teacher. I taught band. I was high school band director, and I wanted to get into real estate. And one of the best forays that I could find was wholesaling, right? You didn't need to have a ton of cash. You didn't need to have a ton of credit history. And so I was a young pup, got into the wholesaling game and learned a lot about that. I learned a lot about best practices, what to do, what not to do, but it gave me a really good foundation in real estate. And then one day, a mentor of mine said, "Hey, why don't you give land a shot? Have you ever tried doing land before?" And I was like, you know, I've built businesses and systems and processes and all this other stuff, and it's not broken. Don't want to try to do anything different with it. And, but you know, I was resistant to it, but I tried it. And in that very first deal, from the time I got the property under contract to the time it closed and funded, it was something like 12 days. And, I didn't even have time to go out to the property, which blew my house wholesaling mind, you know? And I was like, I'm never going back. So land, that's essentially how I got into doing land deals.
Wow. Would you say there's anything, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot that is transferable from house to land, but like, is there anything that, you know, is quite unique to house, maybe a skill set or, you know, a strategy or something that you would say that it was very transferable in land that isn't typically get a lot of shine? I don't know. Is there anything that you see?
You know, I think pretty much because the land business is such a simple model, you know, especially when you're first starting, I think that pretty much everything that can be said has been said about it, which is one of the beautiful things about it, right? Like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Like, if anything that you want to do has already been done before, which there's safety in that, right? But I think that probably the most transferable thing was just the process of running a remote virtual team, right? So like in my wholesale business, I had virtual assistants, I had processes, things like that. And so really the only difference felt like we were just kind of changing the type of asset we were going after and removing some steps. We didn't have to walk houses. We didn't have to estimate repairs. The process got a little bit simpler, right? Which is one of the wonderful things about the land game. Yeah. But I think that just the actual business of, you know, for example, assignments were the exact same. We got a property under contract. We used the same paperwork to assign. So it's very, very similar process. It was just significantly easier, less friction.
How crazy is that? It's significantly easier and the margins are just insane.
Yeah.
Deal cycles a lot shorter.
So it was a no-brainer. After I did that first deal, I said, okay, never going back.
Now, you mentioned about working like virtually and, you know, a lot of people listening aren't used to that. And a lot of people are running a solopreneur and a lot of them do end up building themselves a high paying job. And so like, you know, you might not think, it's unique to house or, but you did get a lot of that sort of practice in the house space. Is there anything that you see as very important or that you learned about running a virtual business or virtual company? And what was life like? Were you actually like backpacking and running a business, or you were just, you know, working remotely? What was that like? And again, anything that sticks out to you?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic question. When I started leveraging the business, it was really because I was working full time as a teacher at the same time. So I needed, people to help with the processes. And so one of the things that I learned really, really early on was if I didn't have those processes dialed in before I brought someone else in, it was like a complete, I was creating an entirely new job of just trying to create those systems on the fly and then train those people and then manage those people. And so I think that probably the most important thing that I learned is before you bring anyone onto the team, even if like your hair is on fire and you just need as much help as possible, I think it's so important for the solopreneur to understand and develop those systems themselves really, really clearly. I mean, if your processes aren't in a place where you can hand over a playbook to someone else that's, relatively intelligent and say, just do this, then you've got some work to do on your systems and processes. So the more that I was able to, build those out and get really clear, it was so much easier for me to be able to onboard people, make sure that, I was kind of managing them and they were being accountable to the right things.
Yeah. I always feel like the word systems and processes, it can be a little bit like, I don't know if the word is nebulous, but like what does that mean to people who've never really come across that before? Maybe they come from, a W-2, they've never had to run anything on their own. Give us some examples as to what are some of the playbooks that you have. What does playbook mean to you? And just maybe a little snippet so people can actually grasp on to understand what are systems, what are processes? These sound so fancy. Do I need to be a big company to have these things? Can you give us a little taster of that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually one of my very favorite topics. So I'm going to geek out for a minute here. One of the things that I learned very early on is that there is a major difference between being something that a friend of mine, Logan Fulmer, calls a deal shop, where you're just trying to get a deal done, right? Versus an actual business that has a pipeline and consistent flow and things like that, right? And I think the biggest differences are, having some set of standard operating procedures, SOPs, where it's basically, how do we do anything? And can we make that a replicatable process? That way we're not having to reinvent the wheel every single time. Right. And so when I'm talking about playbooks or I'm talking about systems and processes, it's really just kind of using all of the same terminology to just plainly say, this is how we do what we do. And we do it every single time. That way we don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. That way we don't have things that break down in the way that we do things. And so, for example, I'm sure anyone who's listening to this has some type of format in their brain, if they've done any type of deal, where if I say, what happens when a lead comes in to your pipeline or when you get a new lead, what do you do, right? Whatever those steps are, step one, I enter it into my CRM. Step two, I call the lead. Step three, I take notes. Whatever that process is, that's essentially your playbook. And so what I like to do is, anytime I had, like when I was starting to develop those systems and processes, when I realized that it was something that I was repeating often, like it was a, these are tasks that I was doing in the same way every time, I just figured out like, hey, if I just document this process, like what do I do step one? What do I do step two? That's essentially building out a playbook, right? And of course, over time, you know, you get variables that come in that you say, okay, well, I learned from that. So when I, if that situation ever comes up, I know what to do again. I don't have to run around with, you know, trying to figure out what to do. And of course, you know, as you develop along the path of entrepreneurship, you figure out how to flesh those processes out. Now we use fancy video playbooks and but essentially, long story long, a playbook is just a way that you do certain things in your business, and you'll do them every single time that way. That way, everyone knows what to do. If someone is sick, you can bring someone else in. But ultimately, it's a way to ensure that the process is standardized, that it's the same way every time.
All right. So Kendall is talking all about processes, building systems, building SOPs and playbooks. These sometimes can be very intimidating terms, but this is really the key to building a scalable business and buying back your time and freeing yourself from building yourself a high paying job. That's not why we came into real estate investing or land investing. And that's why I'm so focused on this. I do this with the product we build with Pebble, and it's all about creating systems and the foundations to be able to create systems. Now, I also run something called the Dirt Hacker Challenge. Now, hold on. It's not a competition. It's not, you know, a contest or anything. It's a 5-day boot camp with me. I run this once a month. Okay. We spend 5 days together really understanding what is the framework to actually building a scalable business, even as a solopreneur. How do we start getting on the right tracks to be able to start projecting ourselves towards scaling the business and putting it on at least partial autopilot? At the end of the day, I think we're all here for some form of freedom. So across these 5 days, we talk about things like building processes. How do we do that? The nitty gritty, the non-sexy things. How do we build task lists and go from that to what I call the camcorder method, and then go from there to actually building a playbook? How do we maintain playbooks for the team? Because things will change over time. How do we hire? Because we know that people are a part of scaling. And automations and technology, this is also the other part to scaling a business and buying back yourself time and pulling yourself out of the business so you can work on the things that you want to work on. It takes time, and it's definitely not a overnight thing. We spent 5 days going through the framework and how you can get started now to start getting yourself in line with scaling and putting your business on autopilot. So if you're interested in this 5-day challenge workshop, I run this every month. Head over to dirthackerchallenge.com. If you go to pebblerei.com, it's just on the bottom of our homepage. You can sign up there. I've made it super accessible. So again, head over to dirthackerchallenge.com. Anyways, I hope you continue to enjoy this episode here with Kendall. Right. And if you look at some of the any kind of business, right? Everything from Starbucks to McDonald's, they've got that down packed to the second, in fact.
Absolutely.
I am on that same boat with you, Kendall, on the importance of building processes. So thank you for breaking that down. Because I the first time I heard it, I was like, man, what are systems? What are playbook? What are SOPs? Like, and this seems to be such natural things for a lot of these successful people who talk about these things. And lo and behold, these things are just so important to you know, scaling, growing your business. But nonetheless, thank you so much for sharing that. And so, Kendall, I feel like you're up to so much. You've got that shirt on, Only Land Fans. And then you're also, you know, in land. What is that? Tell us are you doing anything different right now with your land business that maybe you weren't doing earlier? Are you trying anything new with your land business right now?
Right now, we're really digging in to assignments, double closes, pass-through closings, things to try to mitigate risk. I know that the market is starting to firm up just a little bit more. you know, in comparison to what we saw maybe 6 to 12 months ago. But still, I'm still kind of playing it close to the chest. I know a lot of colleagues, a lot of people that we interview on the podcast are kind of doing the same thing as well, as trying to keep that capital that they're putting into these deals at a minimum, and try to keep that ROI a bit higher, especially whenever they're in an uncertain market. And so that's something that we're really leaning into right now is just trying to mitigate our risk a little bit better. So we're not necessarily, you know, using our capital to close on deals and then turn around and flip them. If we can do any type of creative finance or any type of, you know, assignments, double closes, things like that, that we can leverage the end buyer's capital, then we definitely are leaning into that. So that's kind of where we are in terms of like our approach.
Now, what does the team look like? Is that, you know, is it just yourself? Do you've got other people now, or, you know, how, and what kind of roles do they fill?
Yeah, I like to run lean and mean. So I've got two other assistants that work with me, and specifically in my land business. I have 7 virtual assistants that work across all of my businesses, but specifically in the two in the land business, we've got the two. I have a lead manager who basically handles all of the acquisitions processes. They will do comps, we do a 2-call close process. So they will do actually both of those calls. It depends on the deal. If it's sort of a more sophisticated, you know, seller, larger acreage, and I'll definitely, do the negotiation, but for the most part, really autonomous in the acquisitions department. And then, I like to handle a lot of the transaction coordination. And then I have another assistant that handles a lot of the disposition activities. And so, it's kind of split out into that way. And, we run lean and mean. You know, at one point I thought, gosh, I want this, you know, I want a firm. And the more that I did, hey, wait, the law of diminishing returns here says as little overhead as possible. So, our team is just a rock star team of people. And I'm so, I wouldn't be able to do a fraction of the things that we're able to do without them.
So tell us, you know, you've got some really amazing people on your team. It sounds like not only, you know, with your land business, I know you're involved in other projects, including, you know, Only Land Fans, but how do you find people? What are you doing differently to find people? Or is it your interview process? Is there something that you do or somewhere you post to find people to join you on your land business, to join you on your other ventures?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So when I first started, I was actually just going, you know, I tried different virtual assistant agencies. And when I found one, virtual assistant was with me for a little over 3.5 years, which is kind of a long time for virtual assistants. You know, I had tried to bring other people on through the agency, and I just realized like it was really difficult to find that fit. I realized the more people that I interviewed and tried to bring on the team, the more I realized like how lucky I was with this one first virtual assistant, because I was like, why aren't they fitting in? Like I was spoiled basically from this first one. And so I figured out a strategy where I spoke to my virtual assistant that was my right hand. And I said, listen, if you know anyone personally who would be a good fit on our team, bring that person in and I'd love to interview them. And so he started bringing in people that he knew personally and that he had already kind of pre-screened. And, you know, I don't know, you know, I'm embarrassed to say I didn't think about this sooner, but I mean, he was with me for 3 years. He knew exactly what I liked, you know, how I liked to work. He knew what the culture was and what the expectations were. So he was able to go through kind of like a Rolodex in his mind and say, okay, I know this guy really well, more than I would ever know him just from an interview, and he would be a good fit or he wouldn't be a good fit. And so now I basically get the majority, like anytime I need a new hire, I go to my current existing team and I say, hey, who do we know that would be a great fit? I'm talking about a great fit. And that does a number of things in terms of accountability. But one of the really cool things that I found is that whoever brings someone in, they feel kind of responsible for that person. And so I don't even really have to say, hey, you know, step it up, or like, hey, what's going on? Like, they kind of sort of self-police the other people that they bring on because they don't want to look bad, which I think is kind of cool, right? So it really kind of helps foster this this family kind of dynamic. It's really cool.
So are most of your team members, well, I guess in your land, they've got specific roles. In your other ventures, are they more sort of a generalist role?
I like to be very, very, very position specific. So typically the first person that I'll bring on into any particular venture, like they do a lot of things. And then over time, they start getting very, very specific. And then I'll hire out other positions. So like in my podcast business, I've got a social media manager who is just incredible. She started more as a generalist. And then as we developed, she started getting a lot more specific. And so, so we'll start a little bit, you know, from a general perspective. I have very clear expectations. So it's not like, hey, I'm hiring you on to do all things. So there's typically like a, hey, I need a social media manager. That's where you're going to start. And then we kind of build out and then we niche down again.
Oh, wow. Very interesting. Yeah. Now, so you hire for specific, but you allow them to get a good scope of everything and then you'll hone them in afterwards. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, like for example, my social media manager, when I hired her, it was really because I needed like graphic design and video editing. And so once we started kind of getting a feel for what her strengths and weaknesses were, you know, I noticed like, wow, you're really, really good at XYZ. Would you be interested in doing that? Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not just trying to align people with their strengths. It's also aligning people with like what lights them up. So, you know, find that zone of genius. And that may take a little bit of time, just kind of letting them get a lay of the land. But I started noticing like she was gravitating towards certain things and she'd get really jazzed about talking about certain things. So it's like, you know, would you like to do that? And, you know, of course light bulbs go off and, but I think it was just, you know, it gives them an opportunity to be in the lane that they thrive. And so that's also a really big key, is not just putting people where they're strong, right, but also putting people with like what really lights them up. So they're excited to come to work every day.
Right. So you've talked about your podcast business. Now we know that, obviously. And you've got a land business as well. Like, you're an entrepreneur. You seem to just I think you thrive on this and working on different things. I don't know if it's relatable for a lot of people because they might also be working on something like a W-2, or maybe they do have I noticed you recently had Buck on your show as well. And, you know, people may be tied into working different things. And what kind of challenges present itself when you're sort of, you know, working on a couple different things? You know, have you noticed any challenges or any struggles with that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, obviously there's a lot of talk in the entrepreneur space about bandwidth. You know, I think that in order to be good at anything, like, I mean, really, really exceptionally good, you have to have a very clear focus, right? You can't have like 9 different streams of income unless you've already mastered each one of the 9, right? But I think it was a lot more challenging for me whenever the roles that I played weren't like exactly aligned. And so what I mean by that is like it's a very, very different thing when you are teaching kids how to play instruments versus like running a wholesale house business. Like, there are skills that actually do surprisingly, you know, intersect, but it's not, I mean, they're not, you know, ancillary businesses at all.
Right.
Now it's a little bit easier because with, you know, with the podcast, with the land business, with the coaching business, it's all sort of related. And so one sort of grew out of the other. And so that's significantly easier. But I would definitely understand, like, you know, if you've got a W-2 where you are, you know, I don't know, if you're a dog walker, then that might be a very different skill set than, you know, flipping land or something. So, yeah, I used to have those challenges. It's like, I really needed to compartmentalize, and now it's just, it all feeds itself now.
That's awesome. Speaking of challenges, I mean, Are there any challenges you're working through? Let's say in your land business, is there anything that you, I know you sort of mentioned certain things are tightening up a little bit, but anything that you're no, I don't want to say the word struggling with, or coming to try to learn or grasp, or again, any challenges that you're coming across within the land business right now?
Constantly, every day, every single day. I mean, I think that it's so important to constantly be learning and growing and stretching. Yeah. And so every day I make it a goal and intention to come across something that makes me very uncomfortable because I don't know how to do something. And so, yes, to answer your question, every single day I come across some kind of challenge, like whether it's something as simple as like tech, where I'm like, okay, this is a new tool that I don't know how to use. And I really don't have the patience for that kind of thing. So like, I really have to force myself to sit down and learn something like that.
Right.
Whether it's something like that, or whether it's something like, you know, let's learn about a really advanced development, entitlement process, something like that. Which also getting the nuts and bolts of something like that is not really my jam. I'm definitely a visionary, big thinker kind of person. So when we start talking about detail, I'm like, oh gosh, here we go. that would also be another challenge is like, you know, in my business, I play both the visionary and the integrator role. Mm. You know, if you're familiar with the EOS framework, right now I am both the visionary and integrator, and that's definitely a challenge to wear both of those hats.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right. Yeah. If I were to ask you, if you were to start your land business today, what would the next few months look like to fast track you to success in terms of, I'll leave that open-ended to you. Like somebody's listening and they want to understand, well, how do I get started? What would you do to kind of get started and get a few deals done as quick as possible and continue that momentum? What would you do?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Jesse. First I want to sort of frame this and say, I have seen so many different people approach this business so differently, and they all work, and it's just incredible.
Yes.
Right. So there is there is no one right way. Yeah. I think that there are ways that work depending on how you work, like what are your strengths and how does your brain work, and then go and do those things. It might be inefficient to someone else, but it may make perfect sense for you. So if it were me and I were just starting, knowing my love for nuts and bolts and nitty gritty details, I think that first of all, I cannot stand, and I'll just say this, I'll put this on record here. I cannot stand dealing with data like that. The minute I open up a spreadsheet, I'm like, okay, you have me for about 45 seconds and then I'm ready to get up and leave. Those propensities, right? I would say definitely outsource your data and outsource your marketing. And what I mean by that is there are some fantastic vendors that handle, you know, data and lead generation and marketing. And so a few that come to mind are Supercharged Offers with Alicia Jarrett. That's kind of a one-stop shop where she will pull, scrub, clean your list. Yeah. And do, you know, various marketing channels for you. So something like that, I think if we're talking about fast tracking, where you're not having to pull your own list and scrub your own list and do all of that stuff, that is definitely one of the ways. I'd also big shout out to Lead Mining Pros, Nicholas Nick. He also has a similar service where he will, you know, pull, scrub, clean lists, send out texting and cold calling. So that's probably, looking back on what I know now, If you're looking to get started, I think that that's the fastest on-ramp is to go with a vendor like that that can handle your lead generation and your marketing. So all you are concerned with when you're first starting is getting those leads in and talking to sellers, because that's the thing that's going to move the needle, right?
Yeah, man, you bring up a good point. Now, what if somebody felt a little bit wallet shy? Let's just put it that way. They're not ready to invest in full on services. And you know, I know Nick runs a great service over there. And again, Alicia, and they run a great service with supercharged offers. But what if somebody was a little bit, you know, gun shy with that? Is there anything else you would suggest?
Yeah, so I do want to give this caveat. I want to do a little bit of coaching here. So a lot of people, I see a lot of people that when they're brand new to the land business, they may have the money to do something like buy a small package of data and marketing, but they're not sure. They don't want to do it because they don't have proof of concept yet. Mm. That's not really a condition. That's not like they don't have a money shortage. They just don't know if they should spend their money on that. I'm going to go ahead and say, work through the fear and do it. I'm telling you, you will go through so many things of like, you know, heartache and like tearing your hair out, trying to figure out like Excel and all this other stuff. Just pay the $1,500 or whatever it is. Yeah. And just say, I'm going to try it. I'm just going to do it. And this is an investment. I'm investing into my future business. So I do want to give that caveat. But if you absolutely have $0 and you are looking for a way to get started and get a deal going, one of the easiest things that you can do is kind of what I like to call drive for dollars virtually. So you pick out a target market. It could be something that, like, let's say you're driving home from work and you pass through a neighborhood every day and you notice that there's a vacant lot in this neighborhood that you pass through every day, meaning that there's no houses built on it. It might be between two existing houses, but it's just a lot, right? That may be a really good indication of like, hey, let's see what's going on with that lot. Pull it up on something free like Zillow.com, Redfin, Realtor.com. Pull that neighborhood. And then what you can do is actually search that entire neighborhood for lots that have recently sold. So you can do it by what's listed and what's sold, kind of get like a feel for the market. If you see that there's a pretty good balance between lots that have sold and lots that are for sale, or also you could take a look at like new construction as well. Like, is there new construction activity? So just, you know, search for, you know, in Zillow, I'm trying to think through the filters where if you pick, you know, I like to do all types of properties, just take land out. Mm-hmm. So that way you're seeing condos, you're seeing single family houses, and then look to see like in the filter, the most recent or the minimum year built would be like 2023, right? Do something where you're seeing only new constructions. Then you can start seeing like what the demand is in the area for those, mm-hmm. those lots, right? If you see that it's a pretty decent demand, then what I would do is I would take a look at, you know, you can research who the owner is of any type of property that you see. Just like look at Zillow or look at Google Earth and start picking out those vacant lots. Get the address of those properties. You can see that on the street view, or you can actually even see that in Zillow. You can look at the different addresses, and then go to your city or your county appraisal district's website, and that's where you pick out the owners. Like, that's how you can find owners for individual lots. So if I know it's 123 Main Street, I'm going to go to my county appraisal district. You know, you Google whatever county you're in. So if you're in Harris County, for example, Harris County Appraisal District, you put in that address in their CAD website. And then you get the owner's name. Now you got to contact that owner to see if they're interested in selling the property. So you have to have their contact information. How do you do that? You can use a tool, like a free tool, like truepeoplesearch.com. That's completely free. You get their contact information, call them, say, hey, I see that you have a vacant lot in this area. I'm buying land in this area. Are you interested? That's how you kind of start finding these deals, right? And we can go into a whole other thing about once you get under contract, how do you sell? But sure. I think if you're just trying to get started, that's how, just start keeping an eye out for like what's vacant and what's, you know, available. I think that probably infill lots move the fastest of all the different land types. So that's why I mentioned, you know, look for vacant lots in neighborhoods that you're driving. Like, just keep an eye open. Like, they're everywhere. They're literally everywhere. Once you start looking for them, you'll be like, oh my gosh, these are everywhere. Yeah. Those are all people that you know, are not using the land. So contact them.
Yeah. You know, first time I heard, I'm a Canadian. And you know, when I heard infill lots, it made sense to me. We don't have such thing here in Canada. Like, every lot is built on. But yeah, when I head down to America. This is quite a common thing.
Totally.
And I'm assuming, you know, with infill lots and driving for dollars, this is typically not a typical land strategy or your classic land strategy, but this is must be something that you have transplanted over from your house experience wholesaling. There you go.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing that I love so much about land is when you are driving for dollars in the house space, you kind of have to like figure out if the house is vacant or not by like, does it have long grass? Does it look like maybe someone's not living there? Vacant lots, very clearly see. So any vacant lot you found, they're all absentee owners, which is what we're looking for, right? So it's a lot easier, right, from in comparison to, you know, the house wholesale game. So driving for dollars. Now, again, I'll just say I would not scale using this model. But the question was, how do I just get started and I don't want to spend anything?
Yeah.
That's how you would start finding these kinds of deals and having conversations. Cool. The last little bit that I'll say is about that is, let's say you don't find any deals. Like, let's say everyone you talk to are going to be like, no, I want that property, or I'm not interested in selling, or whatever it is. Like, that's still perfectly okay. Because what really moves the needle is having these conversations and starting to get those reps, because you will come across someone. You might have to talk to 99 people, but you will find that one person that says, yes, I'm interested. And you want to be able to at least converse with them and feel confident and secure enough to be able to have that kind of conversation.
Yeah, I'm 100% believer in getting your reps in, and that's part of it as well. So I appreciate you mentioning that. I also want to go back really quickly what you mentioned about, you know, going through some sort of a coaching or course, whether it's yourself, and I'd love to learn a little bit more about that in a second, or whoever. You mentioned it earlier, like, you've seen everything work and everything. I always say I've seen everything work and not work. One person might say this works and somebody says it doesn't work. It's always possible to find it working.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's just start, I would say, from somebody, from and use that as your benchmark and grow from there. And the possibilities are really endless, but there's a lot of ways you can approach land, like you said. So I also appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Jesse. You know, I get this question asked all the time. Yeah. Hey, have you ever worked with so-and-so, and how's their coaching program and blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. It all works. 100%. Like you said, it all works, right? Yeah. If you work it. But yeah. I see so many people that say, and it's the same thing with like marketing channels, for example, mm-hmm. like, hey, does texting work? Yes, it does, right? Yes, it does. And no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
If you send out 300 text messages over the course of a month, which, you know, in the text game, you know, is extremely small. I mean, like, there are people that send out thousands a day, but if you send out 300 in a month and say, hey, I didn't get a single lead, didn't get a single bite, this is trash, it doesn't work. And everyone that does texting must just be lying because it doesn't work. Yeah. Chances are, you're probably not working the system well, right? Yeah, there's something that you have to figure out about that. Same thing with like other people's courses and coaching. Like, I see so many people that are like, yeah, I did this and it didn't really work. And I say, okay, well, let's walk through that. Well, what did they have you do? And they start laying out the process. And I say, okay, well, did you do it? And they was like, I did everything but this one thing because I thought this was better. And I'm like, well, then how do you know that their process doesn't work? You didn't even really do their process, right? 100%. And so that's the piece that I would say is like, yes, it all works.
Yeah.
And the other crazy thing about that is like, we've seen, and I'm sure you can attest to this too, Jesse, is like mail, for example, when you're sending mail, like you may mail one county, you know, the same amount of mail, the same mailer, everything. And 1 month you get three deals and 3 months in a row, you get nothing.
Yeah.
If you base the effectiveness of your mail campaign on one of the months that you get nothing, you'd be like, well, mail just doesn't work. And then you would miss out on those three deals that when the month actually hits, right? So, you know, that's the thing. I think that you have to be consistent. And when you're looking at anything over time where it's like, does this work? You can't base that decision on a snapshot. You have to get enough data, like 6 months of trying something consistently before you say, okay, maybe this is not for me. Right. So I always look at it as a challenge of like, okay, if this is not working, I don't immediately start like ripping it apart and trying to fix it. Like I'm going to test a little bit and I may iterate, but I'm not just going to say, hey, I tried texting for 3 weeks and it didn't work. So texting is completely dead to me and I need to find something else. Right.
Yeah. I'm so happy you touched on that point. It's exactly those two things I hear, like coaching, certain coaching programs or whatever, or marketing channels. It's everything works and everything doesn't work. It depends on, like you said, over time and consistency and if you worked it. So I am so glad you broke that down. You broke it down way better than I could ever. So thank you so much for doing that.
Well, I've been through it myself. So I know. You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Those are really important things to consider is, you know, are you consistently giving whatever it is a shot at working, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I'm coming into the quick fire round here. What I just want to ask you, not business related, just to kind of get to know Kendall.
Quick fire. This sounds intense, Jesse. Really? Quick fire. My gosh. Okay.
So outside of land, what do you like doing, Kendall?
What do I like doing? Okay, I love going to live concerts. So I'm a big music fan, as a lot of people know. So I love doing that. Outside of land, I'm still a business nerd at heart. So I love building teams and systems and processes, even if it's not in the land business. And so I have like this problem, I'm just going to admit it, that anything that I like anything that I come across that I really like, or like a product or a service, I immediately start building a business around it in my brain. I'm like, how can we do this better? And how can, like, what would my spin be on this? And so I have many, many unlaunched businesses in my brain, but that's what I like doing. I really, really am a workaholic because I like doing that kind of thing. It's just fun.
It's so interesting that you came from music into this. Yeah. I have a similar background. I came from music as well. And
Right on. What did you play? What's your instrument?
I used to play the violin and I used to form an orchestra, symphony orchestra. I used to teach and compete and and then
how did I not know this? This is
it's I call it my first life. I don't really recognize it anymore. You came from that side of things, and it's so interesting. You I feel like you're really creative at heart, and you must just I can see it. I can totally relate to you. How like putting that together is almost like a thrill for you in a way.
Totally. It's a creative process, and you know, whether you're creating by playing music or designing marching band shows or you know, building businesses. It's all creativity.
All right. Next question here. What's your biggest pet peeve?
Biggest pet peeve is probably doing things that are not in alignment with like my like human design kind of thing. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, cause I can tell when there's lots of friction and resistance around something, just because I know that this is not like how my brain operates. So it's as frustrating as like trying to eat a bowl of soup with a butter knife, right? I'm like, this is the wrong tool. This is not right for me. And I know that this is just inefficient. So that would probably be my pet peeve, is like doing things that I'm not like wired to do.
Like data.
Give me a spreadsheet. Yes, you know where I'm going with this. Like that's my data is my butter knife to soup bowl. Like, I can do it if I have to, but it's not going to be fun and it's not going to be pretty.
So. I 100% relate with you on that. If you had to recommend one book that you recently have read, what would it be and why?
Oh, that's a good one. Probably, Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell.
Yeah.
Really, really good book. Callan Faulkner turned me on to that book, and I have read it multiple times now, and it's just, it completely opens up your brain about just how to like how to leverage your time as a human being. It doesn't even have to be about business or whatever. It's like, are you doing the things that you are suited and love to do? And if not, how do we leverage someone else to do that? So
yeah, a very, very actionable book. Actually, my company Pebble wouldn't exist with Dan's a coach of ours, and
that's incredible. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, he actually lives out here in BC.
Nice,
a great book. Buy Back Your Time. Make sure you guys check that out. I love that book as well. I know Kellen loves that book as well. One thing that you did as a kid that you wish you'd do more of nowadays.
Ooh, that's really good. So as a kid. And I didn't really realize this until recently. Like, we were watching some old home videos with my brothers and sisters, but I was like really a cut up. Like, I was I loved to like joke and like, I was constantly like, as a kid, I was I probably wanted to be like a stand up comedian or like an actor or something. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere along the way, I kind of was like, okay, now I need to be serious and like take. So I think probably just like, playing more. I wish that I did that more as an adult, and I'm working on it. It's an intention that I have. I think that it unlocks so much like creativity and it does bleed over into other aspects of your life. And so more play, I think.
I like that. Okay, one more question here. Who would you recommend to have on this podcast and why?
Oh my gosh. That is such a good one.
Your podcast show, Only Land Fans. Is there anybody, I might have had them on, but is there anybody that stands out that maybe I should have on again, or maybe I should have on that I've never had on?
Oh my gosh. That is so good. Okay. So I'm just going to say anyone that I've had on my podcast at all, those people are the most generous, impressive, amazing, incredible people ever. And so I am going to say someone that I haven't had on my show yet, but I recently saw an interview with is Ryan Pineda. I didn't know that like Ryan was also doing like he's done some land stuff as well. And it's always interesting to. Yeah, I recently saw this on a podcast interview that he was doing. He was talking about a land deal that he had out in Vegas, I think. And the reason why I say that name is because it's always fascinating to hear what other like non-land people are doing in land. I think that we can borrow a lot from different industries. And so, there are lots of incredible people that got their start in land, like they are land through and through. And I am just honored to be able to speak with one every single week on my show.
Yeah.
But hearing someone else's perspective that's not like a land guy or a land girl, I think is really cool.
What a great point, actually. Never thought of it that way. Okay. Speaking of your podcast, Saving the Best for Last here. Tell us, I saw that name, Only Land Fans. I remember messaging you like, Kendall, I don't know you. We've never met before. That is hands down such an awesome name. But tell us a little bit more about how people who are listening here can engage with you. You mentioned you've got a podcast, you've got coaching. I think those are the two places people can engage with you. Can you tell us a little bit more about both of those?
Yeah. So the podcast, Only Land Fans, you can get all of our past episodes. We're streaming on all of the podcast services, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. But that basically is an interview that I do every single week with a 6 or 7 figure land flipper about how they've built their businesses, start their businesses, grow, scale, all that good stuff. And so it's really to kind of get an idea of what it can look like to start and scale. And then we get into like the nuts and bolts of everyone's business model. Like I really like to dig into that. And so, I actually do these podcasts. These are actually recorded live with an audience, like a virtual audience and a virtual meetup group that I do. So at the end, like a lot of people don't know this that listen to the show and are not a member of my Only Land Fans Facebook group, but there's a Q&A period at the end of each one of those episodes where whoever is joining us live can actually ask questions to the guests. And that some really incredible stuff comes out of that.
I bet.
We don't share that on the podcast because that's really for our Facebook group members. If you want to join that Facebook group, we'd love to have you. It's just Only Land Fans. You can get links to that group and to our podcast, all the replays, things like that, at onlylandfans.com. So if you're interested in the podcast, come and check us out. We'd love to have you. The more, the merrier. I say land is a party and everyone's invited. So So we, you know, we have a good time with it. The coaching program that actually kind of grew from my experience when I was actually wholesaling houses. So there were a lot of like teacher colleagues and friends that I had that when I was, you know, wholesaling houses, they were like, what are you doing? What is this thing? And of course, teacher heart, I'm like, let me show you. And so I actually helped a lot of people, like, you know, make thousands of dollars by, you know, like as a side hustle. And so when I got into land and I was doing it full time, I started having people approach me and say, hey, can you show me this? Can you teach me this? And the thing that I realized was like, I am able to leverage my time and reach a lot more people if I create like some type of structured container for that. And so that's how the course came about. I work with people specifically who have done maybe a couple of land deals and they're looking to build systems and processes around their business to get consistent deals. Or maybe it's someone who's done some type of real estate, like fix and flips, rentals, things like that, and they want to add land as an income stream. We build out their businesses that way. So it's really focused on building out a consistent business. That's the thrust of the coaching program.
And would they find that also on onlylandfans.com?
Yeah, actually, I do not have like any signup links or anything. It's kind of like, I hate to say it's an exclusive process, but it is like, that we go through this interview process. And so if people are interested in coaching, just reach out to me. You can DM me or on my onlylandfans.com website. There's a contact Kindle section. Just shoot me an email, say, hey, I'm interested in coaching. We can chat and see if it's a good fit for them.
Awesome. Kendall, I'll make sure to include that in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on to share your story and, for allowing me to learn a little bit more about you. And it's just so cool to hear what you're doing and the things that you're interested in. I can really relate to you. So thank you again very much for all your time for coming on the show here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast. I've been wanting to get on for quite some time. So I'm glad we got to do that and talk a little bit of music. I want to hear more about this violin background.
One of these days.
we'll have to chat about that. Maybe we'll do like a land band or something. Only land bands. We'll put together a little group.
Awesome. Kendall, thanks again.
Thanks so much.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Before you stop this episode or hit the next episode, I want to personally thank you for listening to this episode of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast by Pebble. If you found this helpful, we greatly appreciate any awesome reviews and ratings on whichever platform you are listening to this on. And if you have 2 minutes and wanted to step it up even more and help others, feel free to share this in other Facebook groups or pages or any communities, giving others a heads up of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast or the specific episode that may help them on their land investing journey. Once again, thanks so much for listening and catch you on our next episode.